celebrate this most American holiday with a very traditional feast, maybe hours of Patriots on the television, go Patriots, and if you live in New England, a walk with family and friends through the autumn leaves. We have all heard the story of the first feast that the Pilgrims celebrated with the neighboring Indian tribes that lived around the Plymouth Plantation. That first celebration was in 1621, and the feast probably occurred in October, much closer to the harvest time. One of the accounts that I read said that the event was initiated by the neighboring tribe of the Wampanoag Indians when 91 of them arrived at the colony laden with food. The harvest celebration, apparently, according to this source, was an Indian tradition. As the Wampanoags approached the settlement, the 50-odd pilgrims in the colony were very alarmed. They were outnumbered almost 2-1, and they had no idea what the Indians intended to do. It took some time before the pilgrims could relax their guard and get over their fears. Once they understood that this was to be a harvest celebration, they joined right in, and the revelry lasted for 3 days. However, this was not the first time the settlers had encountered their indigenous neighbors. The Mayflower had landed the previous winter, in December 1620, when winter had already closed in. They struggled to build shelter for themselves in freezing weather, but as the winter progressed, their situation grew worse and worse as the ships from England resupplying the colony failed to arrive. The Wampanoags, learning of their plight, shared food from their own stored supplies with the starving pilgrims. This enormous act of humanity probably saved the colony from total loss. As it was, by the springtime of 1621, almost 50% of the 102 pilgrims had died due to famine, disease, and cold. Of the 18 women who landed with the Mayflower, only 4 survived the winter. That is the grim reality, the backdrop to the pilgrims' first harvest celebration. These details, and many others, have not become a part of our popularized myth of the first Thanksgiving. I was struck, for example, by the fact that the settlers rejoiced and thanked God for saving them and celebrated for 3 days, while no acknowledgement is made of the grief and pain they must have felt having lost family members and friends just months before. The story that we hear more often is only a positive one, written in children's textbooks. But if we take another look at history, we realize that the pilgrims suffered enormous losses. Yet despite their pain and suffering, these God-fearing, austere people were able to celebrate. When I thought about my own Thanksgiving, I realized it contains both of the same elements, a time to be grateful and thankful for all that I have, and probably all that we have, while recognizing whatever difficulties I may be struggling with are loved ones who used to be with me at Thanksgiving who are no longer here. So one of the questions that I have to ask myself is, does one have to suffer pain and loss in order to fully appreciate and be grateful for the joyful aspects that make up our lives? Do we have to know pain in order to know joy? Do we have to know pain in order to be grateful for what we have? I will share some of my thoughts on these questions. Sometimes we don't recognize the good things in our lives, not because because we don't want to be appreciative, but because our lives are so busy with so many demands placed on our time that we simply don't have the time or feel that we don't have the time to slow down. As we fast forward through our lives, we can miss a great deal. We don't take time, as the old saying goes, to smell the roses. However, when some terrible event collides with our lives, we're stopped short. We're forced to face and deal with whatever difficulties there are, and sometimes in reflection, we yearn for the way our lives used to be before the major problems occurred. We learn to appreciate what we had in retrospect. Unfortunately, when it's too late. There are times, however, when major difficulties can change our lives dramatically, and we gain a deep appreciation for all the people and resources that supported us and sustained us through the adversity. So, to answer the question, does one have to suffer pain and loss in order to recognize and be grateful for the joyful aspects of our lives? Many of us would answer yes. We learn gratitude belatedly in response to our own hard times. Meg Riley is the minister of the church of the larger fellowship, and she said, quote, "It often appears to me that people in the hardest conditions exhibit the strongest commitment to gratitude. Perhaps that's because those of us who were swimming in comfort and health, love and money, privilege and opportunity take so much for granted or are too busy to notice all of life's abundant gifts." So she too is saying yes to the question. Gratitude for help offered in times of need can be closely related to suffering. She is saying more than that, however. She is also saying that those who can insulate themselves from the harsh realities of life can also be insulated from many aspects of life that offer joy. But that's not the whole answer for me. In 2007, I met Forest Church at General Assembly. For those of you who do not know Forest Church, he was the minister of All Souls Church in New York City for 29 years. And he was one of our most articulate ministers and prolific writers. He was diagnosed with a terminal illness, and during a period of remission, he completed his final book, Love and Death, My Journey Through the Valley of the Shadow. In this book, he shared the insights from his life that had taken on new depth and new urgency as he faced his own mortality. He said, quote, "Life is not a given, but a wondrous gift. That gift comes with a price attached. One day something will steal it from us. That should not diminish our lives. It increases their value. Fragility and impermanence ensure life's preciousness. We can truly love only that which we know we must one day lose," unquote. He recommitted himself to making amends where necessary and to living as fully and lovingly as he could in the time remaining. He said also that three principles had always guided his life. They are, love what you have, be who you are, do what you can. I'll get back to those. Another person who stands out in my life was a friend named Jerry. Like Forest Church, he was a very energetic, outgoing person who'd been very successful in his life and had a loving family and a wide circle of friends. Both of these men thoroughly enjoyed their lives, and each was stricken with a terminal illness. They faced their illnesses and carried on their lives as fully as they possibly could right up until the end. They also gave thanks for the wonderful things they had enjoyed in their lifetime and in a life well lived. Did they learn appreciation and gratitude when suddenly faced with illness? No, they didn't. They did not need to learn that lesson late in life. Both these men had lived a full life of joy and appreciation for what they had enjoyed and what they had accomplished over many years. The way they chose to deal with the end of their lives was a continuation of the philosophy they had always lived by. This, I think, is a more complete answer to the question. Yes, adversity can teach us gratitude, but that's only one way. The better way, I believe, is to make a decision about how we want to be in the world, independent of our circumstances. We can decide that we will live with a sense of appreciation, gratitude, and thanksgiving. We can live more intentionally, more lovingly, more gratefully. As Meg Riley states, quote, "Gratitude is not a feeling, it's a commitment." When we're committed to gratitude, regardless of how we might feel inside, we make life choices which offer thanks to all that is good in the universe. I do think that commitment to gratitude serves as a daily compass in this big and messy world. Unquote. To live this way is not an easy matter. It's a tough decision to make in the first place, and it is hard, very hard, going through life trying always to see the glass as half full. I do know that there are times when we all feel overwhelmed with troubles, when it seems impossible to find anything good to say. We've all been there. One cannot get to a certain age without encountering some types of difficulties and problems. We are not Pollyannas seeing a silver lining in every cloud. Sometimes there is no blue sky that we can perceive. Yet we can look and look hard for something, however small, to be grateful for. So, start now. Start small. Have you noticed how beautiful the autumn leaves were this fall? More spectacular, I think, than all the years I've lived in New Hampshire, and that's 42 years. I collected some red, yellow, and orange maple leaves the other day that seemed particularly brilliant, and sent them to friends in Florida who have talked about wanting to see the fall colors in New England. Maybe next year they'll visit. They've been invited quite often. Are the colors really that much brighter than other years? Or is it just that I'm trying to see the world around me with greater appreciation? Have you noticed things in your own life, perhaps ordinary things, that you've been taking for granted that now appear more beautiful or more significant? Make a list in your mind so that you'll remember to take pleasure in them. Have you done what you could? What about your friends and family? Do those relationships need more of your attention? Are they overdue for your time? Stay in the present. Don't worry about the future or obsess over the past, which cannot be changed anyway. This day offers each of us an opportunity to reinvent ourselves, to begin again, to think and act in ways that bring new joy, not just to ourselves, but to the people that we care about. Just do it, as the Nike ad would tell us. You don't need a plan, a roadmap, or a prescribed destination. Remember the old expression, life happens when you're busy doing something else. I am sure that you have noticed that this is not just a Thanksgiving message. It's a daily message. It's a wake-up call for each of us to open our eyes and our hearts. A reminder not to take things for granted, but to appreciate and be grateful for every day of our lives. I would like to end with a verse written by Forrest Church. Let us want what we have, praying for health if we are blessed with health, for friendship if we are blessed with friends, for family if we are blessed with family, for work if we are blessed with tasks that await our doing. And if our lives are dark, may we remember to want nothing more than the loving affection of those whose hearts are broken by our pain. Let us do what we can, not dream impossible dreams or climb every mountain, but dream one possible dream and climb one splendid mountain. That our lives may be blessed with attainable meaning. And let us be who we are, embrace our God-given nature and talents, and answer the call that is our very own call and not someone else's, thereby enhancing our little world and the greater world we share. Let it be so.